She stops moving. What do we tell people around here if I agree to this ridiculousness?
She blows out a breath, and then quickly takes in another to power her through her thought.
Everyone knows that I've been here and you've been there, and those two places are separated by hundreds or thousands of miles. I don't know, a long damn way.
I scratch my head. I hadn't thought of that.
Shit. Besides the fact that Debbie emailed me asking if we were a thing.
She almost growls. I jab a finger in her direction. And Joe, the floor mat guy, heard we were cozy. I look at her stone-faced. He actually said we were cozy. Sophie makes a face. On a normal day, in a normal conversation, I'd pause and ask what that's all about. Is it out of the realm of possibility she'd get cozy with me? But this is not a normal day, so I stay focused on the task at hand. How does everyone know we weren't keeping in contact all these years? I ask. As far as they know, we've been talking and emailing, and our love rekindled when I came to town, assuming we were in love. Maybe we even saw each other while you were in Florida, right? I mean, is it completely illogical that we had a fling when you were in college?
With you? Kind of.
Something about the way she says it prickles me in the wrong way. Don't lie, I say. You know something would have happened between us if I lived here.
I don't know that.
Yes, you do. How many times did we almost kiss?
Well, it never happened,
she says, tucking a strand of hair behind her ear as she looks away. I clear my throat to refocus. But it could have. And it's completely plausible that I came to visit you, or vice versa, at some point, and we had something. Felt it wasn't right and let it go. Think about it. She grabs a towel and begins to wipe off the counter. Her motions are rougher than necessary. I have half a notion to take it out of her hands so she'll focus on what I'm saying, but I don't, because I think that will incense her. Instead, I watch her work this out. She bites her bottom lip and polishes the counter until the rag squeaks as it crosses the laminate. The longer she takes to say something, the more my stomach begins to twist.
This is insane, she says finally. Do you know that?
Yes, I'm very aware. Her head falls to the side.
What would I get out of pretending to be your wife again?
You'd actually be my wife, I point out carefully.
She tosses the towel down. Why? Remind me.
I can't risk any weaknesses in this plan. It has to be rock solid and real. I'm trying to prove to Montgomery that I'm the best, sturdiest, most committed guy for the job, and I can't do that if anything looks suspicious. And, I add, if he finds out that I'm now unemployed, this could be my saving grace.
I hate that it makes sense.
And even more important to you is that you'll get out of your tax bind scot-free, and you'll be able to get on my health insurance plan.
Legal antibiotics,
I say with a wink.
I was joking about the antibiotics. You know that.
I take a few steps so that we're closer. Her eyes are wary as she tilts her head back and looks up at me. If you don't like this, if you have any reservations at all, we're done here, I tell her. No pressure. Just say the word and I'll drop it, and you'll never hear about it again. Her lip pops free.
How long would we have to keep up the charade? Because I don't want to be married to you forever. I might find the one.
I don't know.
Ballpark it, Doc.
I think fast. At least until I get the job. Once I'm settled in, we could get divorced or have it annulled.
So 6 weeks, maybe?
Probably. Not long. I'll go to Orlando and we'll say you're staying here to try to sell the business. After a few weeks, we can say it won't sell or you can't part with it. Whatever you want to say. Then we'll just tell everyone that we decided to part amicably.
Yeah, I'm not moving from here. This is my home, period.
I wouldn't expect you to leave.
Well, you kind of expect me to marry you, it seems, so how do I know where the line is?
I laugh. Fair point. She walks toward the refrigerator and piles her hair on top of her head. An elastic appears from out of thin air, and she winds it around the ball before turning to face me. Her features are smoother. The glossiness in her eyes from the wine has waned. She takes a deep breath.
You know, I find it hilarious that you wouldn't give me a prescription because it was ethically wrong, but you'd propose a marriage of convenience.
Unlawful dispensing of medication is a major offense. Marrying a woman that willingly agrees to the union is not.
Whatever.
She steps away and walks around the island. Goosebumps break out across my skin. Outside, the full moon holds court over the stars. A breeze from the open window flutters the edges of the curtains. I run a hand down my face. A nervous energy tears through me, and I have to dig deep to override the instinct to start rushing through things. It's a trick I learned in veterinary school. How to focus on what's in front of you and take things a step at a time. She takes in a long, whooshing breath.
So you would cover half of the property taxes?
I would cover them all. Her head shakes back and forth.
No, I feel weird about that. But if you could pitch in for half, I could scrounge up the other half. And that really would change a lot of things for me.
She clears her throat.
It'd save the honey house. And that's all I really care about.
That's no problem, I say. I actually insist on paying them all. It only seems fair. She considers this.
Okay. Thank you. But should I feel bad about this? I mean, is this a form of prostitution?
I know she's being serious, and I know too that I should take this seriously, but I'm me. So I smirk. Are you planning on sleeping with me? I ask.
No!
Then I don't see how it's prostitution. I step behind the island to adjust myself. The thought of her naked, no matter how brief of a moment it was, is enough to make me hard. Being dead serious. Is it really any different from having a second job? You don't have to do anything other than pretend like you love me for a couple of weeks.
Well, when you put it like that.
My voice stays remarkably calm, despite how anxious I feel inside. Anything else? Her shoulders relax as she sorts through her thoughts. She puts a finger across her lips as she studies me.
Fine.
She drops her hand and straightens her shoulders.
This is crazy, and feels like it shouldn't make sense, but it does. And I've done enough things in my life that felt like they made sense, but didn't. Plus, your powers of persuasion are on point. And it's not lost on me that I lost money in my first marriage and am gaining it this time, so... Yes. I'll marry you.
My insides twist into a tight knot before releasing with what feels like a spray of confetti. I watch her for any hint that she's kidding or reconsidering. But there's nothing. Just a look of resolution on her pretty face.
We go in the morning, before I back out, she says.
If you're afraid of backing out, we aren't doing this.
We are doing this. No takebacks on the proverbial ring pops this time.
She forces a swallow.
I have a friend in Dogwood Lane named Haley. She loves this kind of stuff. I know she'll help me get it all together.
Holy shit. Tomorrow? I ask.
Her hand goes to her hip. Do you want to do this or not, Doc?
Tomorrow sounds great. I flash her a big smile. We can go tonight if you want to.
Tomorrow morning. Do you work?
I can get out of there by noon.
Perfect. Let's be on the road by 12:30.
She starts to turn away but stops. Her hand is shoved my way. It dangles in the air, all dainty and sweet, and I try to hide my smile as I take her palm in mine. Her skin is warm and soft. I fight the urge to shiver. Our eyes hold each other as if they are making a deal of their own. It's an agreement I don't want to think about. Not right now with her hand in mine and a hefty dose of adrenaline pouring through my body. She draws away, breaking contact. Her mouth opens in an exaggerated yawn. She stretches her arms over her head, and I have to force myself not to look at the strip of skin that appears between the hem of her shirt and the waistband of her jeans.
I'm going to bed, she says. Today has been crazy, to put it mildly.
All right, I'm going to, I guess.
There's food in the fridge if you're hungry.
I stick my bottom lip out. I suck at cooking. She points a finger my way as she heads for the doorway.
Nope, not getting conned into cooking for you, and, she says before rounding the corner, I also won't cook for you when we get married.
Her feet stop moving so abruptly that she almost falls forward into the wall. She turns and looks at me.
I just said, when we get married, she says in amazement. What the heck? What happened in here tonight? How much wine did I drink?
Before I can answer, she shakes her head and disappears into the darkness. I sit on a stool at the counter. The silence is almost deafening. I tap a finger against the laminate as I look around the kitchen. Strangely, I think I'd feel comfortable enough to get up and make myself something to eat if I really wanted to. Images of getting up in the morning and coming down for breakfast shoot through my mind. It's not a bad thought. Not at all. But then again, if it all works out the way it's supposed to, I won't be here long enough to get used to it. I sigh. Stay focused, Mackenzie, because this might work if you don't screw it up. I head toward the doorway and catch the sweet scent of her perfume lingering in the air. I smile. Good luck to me.
Chapter 8. Sophie. The floorboards above me creak. Footsteps shuffle around like they have on and off all night. There's a satisfaction in knowing that Holden can't sleep either. If I thought he was sleeping like a baby after that out-of-nowhere marriage proposal earlier, I'd probably go upstairs and bang around until he woke up. The clock on my bedside table glows the time in a bright green. Another minute passes as I watch, and I wonder how many times I've seen it tick by since I came to bed hours ago. It's been a lot. Many. I've likely watched every one since I laid my head on the pillow. Because how is someone supposed to sleep after they've just agreed to marriage in such an off-the-wall way? Did that really even happen? The late-night fog in my brain has me considering that I misread the entire situation, that there was no way a man I just got reacquainted with asked me to be his wife. That doesn't happen. Not in real life. Not in my real life. And definitely not by a man who looks like Holden Mackenzie. But it did. It really must have happened. There's no other way to explain the butterflies in my stomach. Wine wouldn't even cause this kind of craziness. I roll over onto my side. It's the only way not to lose the bed and breakfast without getting alone, I say into the night. And it'll save me $86 million in interest and a whole lot of dignity. I chew on my bottom lip as I consider my situation. It's not that big of a deal, really. It's not like Holden would be taking my marriage virginity. And there's no way to get hurt emotionally because I know from the onset that he doesn't even really want to be married to me. Unlike Chad, who convinced me he did. I toss to my other side and look out the window. Liv's house is dark. I wish a light would come on so I could justify going over there and talking to her. As I snuggle down into my pillows again and try to get comfortable, I listen for Holden. It just takes a couple of minutes until the footsteps start pattering across the ceiling again. The bed above me squeaks. I curl up in my blankets and try to stop listening for every single sound. I close my eyes, put my pillow over my head, tuck my feet inside the blankets so they are definitely not hanging over the edge and putting themselves at risk for being grabbed by a non-existent monster. I lie still, focus on my breathing, yet I still jump when an owl hoots outside my window. This is ridiculous, I hiss, ripping the covers off me. Slipping my feet into a pair of sneakers, I glance at the clock again. 2:02 in the morning. Good thing I've woken Liv up this early, late, whatever before, I mumble. I grab a robe off the bedpost and tie it loosely around me. Then I creep quietly into the hall. The kitchen is dark as I pass it. Only the light above the stove is on. My steps fall softly as I make my way to the door and step outside. The night air welcomes me with a cold kiss. I pull my robe tighter and hurry my way down the walkway and across the road. I scurry up Liv's driveway and the porch stairs. The key is cool and damp as I pluck it off the window ledge and stick it in the door lock. The entryway smells like cinnamon and apples as I step inside. A light glows faintly in the kitchen at the other end of the house. Everything is still and quiet. I sneak through the living room, careful not to trip over the vacuum she's left in the middle of the floor for the last month, and find my way to her bedroom door. Liv, I whisper as I peek inside her room. You awake? She rustles in the darkness.
What, Sophie?
Her voice is heavy with sleep as she gets her bearings. You up?
No, I'm not up. It's 2:00 a.m.
Panic clears the sleep from her tone. Are you okay? Is Job all right? I pat across the carpet and find the edge of her bed. We're fine. I just want to talk.
Now?
I slip off my shoes and climb in beside her. I nestle down in the blankets. Liv rolls over to face me. The nightlight from a wax burner on her dresser provides enough illumination for me to see the outline of her face. I couldn't sleep, I tell her.
Well, thanks for waking me up, too.
No problem. She grins. What's keeping you up? Taking a deep breath, in the hope that it'll calm my internal systems a little bit and let me communicate things clearly, I try to come up with the best way to deliver this information. Soph, it's been a weird night.
Weird like how?
Well, I pull the blankets tight against my chest. I'm getting married tomorrow. She blinks.
That is weird. Told you.
She pulls the covers away from her face, as if doing so will help her see me, and this situation more clearly.
You aren't serious.
I'm serious as a heart attack, I think. I touch my bottom lip with my finger. No, I am. I'm getting married, Sophie.
She lifts her head off the pillow.
What's going on? Forcing a swallow, I wonder if I should just say Holden's name or describe my recollection of the night. The latter would be more fun, but I think she might start shaking me if I take too long to get to the good part. But as I prepare to say his name, an energy shoots through my body. I squirm under the blankets.
I'm going to kill you if you don't start talking, she warns.
Okay, fine. I take a deep, shaky breath. To make a very long and complicated story short, Holden and I are getting married tomorrow in Dogwood Lane.
What?
She yelps. She sits up and scrambles to find the light. I lie perfectly still and await her interrogation. The lamp switches on and I squint.
My sister hovers over me, her eyes narrowed too, as she tries to figure out whether I'm just screwing with her. "Will you lie back down?" I ask. "You're letting cool air into the bed and I'm already cold." "Shut up. What do you mean you're marrying Holden?" I shrug. "I mean, he asked me to be his wife and I said yes." She rubs her eyes with the back of her hands. "I feel like I just missed a chunk of your life. This doesn't make any sense." She drops her hands. "Have I been in a coma or something?" I can't help but laugh. "It's really not as complicated as you're thinking it is. He needs a wife to get a job, and I'm available and willing. Easy peasy lemon squeezy." The words sound so matter-of-fact. It's so cut and dried, so impersonal when I say it out loud. Like he just asked me to house sit or something. "He wants to marry you for a job?" She rubs her eyes. "What do you get out of it?" "Well, besides the benefits of having a man like that in your bed." I press against the mattress and sit up. The idea of having Holden in my bed has no room in this conversation, or any conversation. We're talking about a marriage as a business proposition, because that's what this would be, a business transaction, not a romantic interlude. He's made that clear. I've made that crystal clear, I think. Liv completely and utterly ignores everything I just said. She takes in a deep breath, wide awake now, and giggles. "You little minx," she squeals. "I knew there was fire between you, but no, stop it. It's not like that." Her smile slips. "Then what's it like? Because if I'm marrying anyone, I better get to sleep with him." I pull my robe away from my neck. "I'm not sleeping with him." "But you will, right?" "No." "That's a shame." "That's smart," I insist. "You aren't supposed to mix business and pleasure." She grins wickedly. "I bet that man would be a whole lot of pleasure." Images of him in his gray sweatpants come back to haunt me. My stomach tightens as I recall how his ass filled out the back and how his thighs looked tight and muscled as he walked into tanks. "Not the point," I say, plucking my brain out of that thirst trap. "The point is that we're getting married because it'll help us both out of a bind. He doesn't want me as a wife-wife, which is fine because I don't want him as a husband-husband either." She settles back against the headboard. "Okay, fine. Again, what do you get out of it?" "He's paying the property taxes." After squirming around, I sit up and lean against the leather-wrapped headboard beside her. She gives me a moment of peace and doesn't poke. "Should we just say screw this and go make brownie batter and eat it with a spoon?" she asks. "Nah, I'm not hungry," I figured. I look at her. She reminds me of my mother, with her pointed nose and the mole on the underside of her chin. "I need you to tell me this is okay. Be my big sister and boss me around. Force your opinion on me." She presses her lips together. "First, answer this. You know, Job and I would help you, right? We could get the money, and we'd be happy to." I force a swallow. "I know, but I'm not putting you guys in debt because of my choices. I'm a big girl. The honey house is my baby, it's my responsibility, and you both help out so much already." She lets her head fall to the side until it touches mine. "The honey house might be in your name, but you know it's like home to Job and me too, Soph. We want to help." "I know, but I want to make this happen on my own. It's important to me. And there's a part of me that feels like having Holden help me out kind of takes that away from me a little bit. But another part says it's the same thing, really, as getting alone. Which I really don't want to do because Grandma would roll over in her grave." I pause. "And Candace at the bank is the last thing I want to face since she told everyone Chad left me to start with." "Yeah. Good point." We sit, heads touching, for a long time.
I watch the shadows from the wax burner dance on the walls and listen to Liv's breathing.
You know, you should probably use a mouthwash when you get married. Your breath stinks in the middle of the night.
I tease. She huffs and lifts her head off mine.
You are such a brat. I should just breathe all over you for waking me up.
She knocks my shoulder with hers before settling back against the headboard.
You know that I'll back you in whatever you do. You're a smart girl. And if this is what you think works for you, then you do it, balls out.
I wrinkle my nose at the expression, but let it go.
Even though my track record proves I pick terrible men?
She laughs. Yeah, because we all get one screw-up, and Chad was yours.
I'm not sure this could be a screw-up. I mean, there's not a lot that can go wrong.
Maybe this, maybe Holden, is the answer to my prayers. Maybe Grandma is somewhere laughing her butt off right now.
Like you said, what do you have to lose? She asks. It's not like you haven't been married before, and it's not like it's a marriage for real.
You could think of it like a very long, serious, expensive date.
That's one way to look at it.
She twists around to face me.
I mean it, Soph. You've been so stressed out lately. Chad kind of stole your spark a little.
I say you marry Holden and have fun and play it up and enjoy it. Maybe you'll discover the little pizzazz that you used to have.
I had pizzazz?
A little. She winks.
So yeah, find your pizzazz and have some fun. If nothing else, it'll be a damned good story for your grandkids someday.
I will not tell my grandkids this, I say with a laugh.
Are you crazy?
I'm not the one marrying a man. Tomorrow.
Yeah. I blow out a breath. Do you think I need to tell Job?
For sure.
How do you think he'll take it?
She shrugs.
Let's find out.
I pull my phone from my robe's pocket and pull up my brother's texts. Sitting on the edge of the bed, I begin to type. Hey, Job. Almost immediately, the three little bubbles dance on the screen to let me know he's texting.
Job, it's late.
Me, I have some news.
Job, question mark.
Me, I'm getting married tomorrow. I cringe as I wait for his answer. My stomach flip-flops. Lib places her hand on my shoulder while we watch the screen.
Job, how much did I drink tonight?
Me,
ha.
Job,
let me guess. The vet.
Me, good guess.
Liv laughs.
Well, he seems less surprised than me.
Job, you happy?
Me,
yes.
Job,
then go for it.
Liv and I look at each other. Her brow is arched toward the ceiling. She looks as confused at Job's reply as I feel. I don't know what I was expecting from my brother, but going all in wasn't it. My fingers fly across the screen.
Me, that's it? No warning or threats or outbursts?
Job,
you know what?
I trust your judgment.
Me,
since when?
Someone must have his phone tonight, Liv says with a laugh.
Job,
I believe and live by the idea that someone gets to make their own choices and either reap the rewards or suffer the consequences. Just know I've got your back if it doesn't work out.
Me. You aren't giving me the warm fuzzies over here, brother.
Job.
Nope. That's why you are at Liv's. You are at Liv's, aren't you?
I look at my sister. We laugh.
Me.
Yes.
Job.
Good. Do your thing. Just take into consideration that I will be less patient to castrate him than I have been in the past with men you and Livy date. Make sure he's clear on that, too.
Me.
Noted.
Job.
Good. Then I'm going to go back to what I was doing. Love you.
Me.
Love you.
I blow out a breath and look at my sister. She's watching me with a dose of curiosity. Walking around the foot of the bed, she pulls me into a hug. I rest my cheek against her shoulder as we embrace.
I know it sounds weird to be excited for you, but I am, she says as she lets me go. The world works in mysterious ways. If you aren't willing to take some shots in the dark, you may never hit your target. And Job seems okay with it. The threats were his brotherly duty. You're so wise in the middle of the night, I tease. That I am. Now get out of here or get in bed and be quiet because I'm tired. I head to the door. I'm going home. Love you, Liv. Love you, Sophie McKenzie. Shut up, I say as the light goes off. I make my way back through her house, feeling a little lighter than when I came in earlier. I step outside and lock the door behind me. After I hide the key, I turn to face the honey house. My home. The place where my fiancé is probably sleeping. I think back to the night I left Liv's after Chad moved out. In a way, I felt relief. Just in a completely different way. It's time to live a little, I say softly. It's time to do myself a favor for once. With a smile, I head back across the street.
Chapter 9. Holden. That will be 1782. The cashier looks at me expectantly. The red apron covering her body matches the tobacco sign hanging behind her and almost disguises the pizza stain on her chest. Would you like to donate a dollar to help with research for Phelan-McDermid syndrome? Absolutely. I hand her a 20, and she doles out my change. Not bothering with my wallet, I stuff the bill and coins into my pocket and take the plastic bag from the counter. The door whines as I push it open. I step outside and my eyes immediately flick to the rental car. My lips tug toward the sky. Sophie is sitting in the passenger's seat. One leg is bent and her elbow rests on top of it. She gazes out the windshield toward the row of evergreen trees on the edge of the gas station parking lot. She looks calm and collected as she waits for me to return, like she has not a care in the world. Not at all like we're on our way to get married. I wait for my stomach to flip, to sour, for my chest to tighten as my brain flashes a red light and screeches, "Abort!" But none of that happens. Each step I take toward my newly minted fiancé feels like the same ones I took yesterday and every day before that. Normal. Routine. Familiar. It's from all the summers together as kids. I'm comfortable with her. That's all it is. I blow out a breath. The sound whooshes from my body, but I still don't feel jittery. And that absolutely worries me. Shouldn't I be a little anxious about this? I thought she'd tell me this morning that she'd changed her mind, that the wine got to her last night. Instead, she let me know that Haley was expecting us by 4 o'clock, so I needed to be out of the office by noon, sharp. My brain is fuzzy as I walk back to the car. Part of it is from the pace of everything. The other part is from the lack of sleep last night. Sophie turns her head as I climb in next to her.
Took you long enough. I thought you just had to pee, she asks.
There was a line.
There's like 2 people in there.
She eyes the bag.
What the heck is all that?
I toss the bag onto the dashboard. The mountain of chocolate bars and hard candies rustle together. It took far too long to make my selections. I don't know what Sophie likes, and for some reason, unbeknownst to me, it felt absolutely critical that I get something she'd enjoy. The longer I looked, the more pressure piled onto my shoulders, and the more desperate I was to get it right. So I did what any reasonable person would. I bought one of almost everything. Except the orange slices and peach rings. Nobody ever likes those. My face flushes as Sophie tugs the bag onto her lap. Before she can say a word, I start the car and pull onto the highway.
Holy crap! Did you leave anything for anyone else?
She asks with a laugh. If you have negative opinions about junk food on road trips, then you can keep them and your hands to yourself. She narrows her eyes playfully.
I didn't say I have negative opinions about it. I was just sort of passive-aggressively implying that you might have a problem.
I narrow my eyes back. We aren't married yet. I don't have to justify anything to you. She holds the bag in the air. The candy nests at the bottom, stretching the plastic into an egg shape.
This must weigh 10 pounds, she says.
I roll my eyes, trying not to notice how cute her nose looks all wrinkled up. I didn't know what you liked, okay? So I got a lot of options.
Aw,
she says, the bag hitting her lap again with a thud. She places a hand on her heart.
You got all this for me? Without me asking? Why, Doc, how sweet.
I glance at her out of the corner of my eye. Her cheeks are pink from holding back a laugh as she dramatizes my thoughtfulness. It was a goodwill gesture, I tell her. Keep making fun of me, and you'll get an apple on the way home. Her hand falls on top of the bag.
No one eats apples on road trips.
Except you if you keep making fun of me.
I'm not making fun of you.
Her voice falls away as she peers into the bag. She pulls out a candy bar.
Especially since you got me a payday.
That one's for me, I say, swiping it out of her hand.
Hey!
She stares at me in disbelief for a long second. Her eyes sparkle at my actions, and before I know it, she reaches for the candy. I switch it quickly into my left hand and hold it near the window. Gotta be quicker than that, I tease.
Or more forceful, maybe.
She places the bag on the floor. Her seatbelt is unbuckled. She plants one of her hands on the middle console, her legs drawing up toward her body in the seat. I squeeze the candy. The plastic wrap crinkles in my hand. Sophie starts toward me. I lean away, keeping the loot as far away from her as possible, and ignoring the zap of energy from her shoulder bumping mine. Our eyes meet each other's just as she's about to reach for the candy, and we come to the same quiet realization. She'll have to literally climb onto my lap to get the payday. My brain starts the abort procedure I was waiting for earlier, and I know I should keep my mouth shut. But I can't help it, because I'm a man. How bad do you want it? I ask, lifting a brow. There's a hint of defiance in her eyes that causes my breath to stall in my chest. I have to force myself to look away from her and at the road so we don't crash. Still, I can feel her beside me, contemplating her options. Finally, she slinks back into her seat.
Damn you.
Relief and disappointment wash over me in equal doses. I force a long, hard swallow and reach for the window switch. The cool air fills the car as the glass is lowered. I twist my face to it in the hope that it will calm the heated blood roaring through my veins and bring some sense of rationality back to my brain. Get a grip, Mackenzie. Don't make it weird. I toss the candy bar on her lap. Here, you can have it.
Really?
She eyes the payday suspiciously.
Nope, forget I said that. I don't want you to rethink it.
She swipes up the bar and begins to tear the wrapper. Her cheeks are flushed as she refuses to make eye contact with me.
You might make a decent fake husband after all,
she says. I snort. You do realize this is going to be a real marriage, right?
Yeah, but you'll just be my real legal husband. Still my fake real husband.
I like how you differentiate that, crazy lady.
It's all about the justification.
She chomps off the end of the candy bar and shrugs. The color in her face begins to even back out.
So did you really want this payday? Or were you just screwing with me?
It's actually my favorite. For real, I tell her, rolling the window back up.
Mine too. That's weird.
I lived on them in vet school. Figured they couldn't be that terrible for me since they're loaded with peanuts. She furrows her brow like I'm out of my mind.
Keep telling yourself that. I just accept that I've trained my body to operate on sugar and caffeine.
Shadows dance through the car as we go around a long, meandering bend. Sophie breaks the payday in half and hands me one chunk.
Here, she says as I take it. I have a thing about people being hungry.
You're so sweet.
Ugh.
She laughs softly to herself as she shoves the wrapper back in the bag.
Don't tell anyone.
She rests an arm on the console and gazes out the window. I watch her out of the corner of my eye, sneaking in longer glances here and there. The light yellow shirt that looks like silk brings out the gold in her eyes. A pair of belted black pants flaunts the dip of her waist and showcases the curve of her hips. I didn't give much thought as to what she or I would wear for our nuptials. There wasn't time. But when I saw her with her hair flowing down her back in loose waves, like she woke up like that in the morning, I was stunned. She'd put time and energy into looking pretty. Very fucking pretty for this. And all I had with me was a pair of khakis and a polo shirt. Not only that, but how do I tell her she looks gorgeous? Do I even tell her that to start with? If it were a date, I absolutely would, but it's not. It's a real but sham marriage, and I'm not sure what the protocol is for something of this magnitude. Shit. I look at her again. I would have worn something nicer if I had more lead time for this, I say. I only brought stuff for work and screwing off. She whips her head my way, her brows tugged together, framing surprised yet assessing eyes.
What are you talking about?
She asks.
You look great.
I sigh. I feel underdressed next to you, and I don't want you to think I didn't try. Her laugh flows through my ears.
Are you just fishing for compliments?
What? No.
You are, aren't you?
She settles back in her seat again.
But since you gave me the payday, I'll play along. You look great, Holden. Very handsome.
No, stop, I say with a laugh. I was just saying I wanted you to know that I did my best under the circumstances. Especially since you look beautiful. She looks at me and tries to hide her smile. But the way her eyes light up makes my day, even without a full-blown grin.
Well, thank you,
she says. Her head falls back against the headrest.
I don't think this outfit compares with the dress I wore the last time I got married. But the veil and all that crap didn't help then, so maybe just winging it will help this go round.
There's something about her vulnerability that has me wanting to move my hand 3 inches to the right and touch hers. I want to reassure her that her first marriage didn't fail because of her. There's no damn way. And to promise her that ours will be as easy and quick as she hopes. As we hope.
Why are you bad husband material? She asks.
The question catches me off guard. Huh?
At Tank's the other night, you said you weren't husband material. Why not? Really? No bullshit.
I regrip the steering wheel. The conversation from what feels both like just yesterday and 10 years ago trickles through my mind. I did say that. I know what I meant, too. I just don't know how to explain it to her. I blow out a breath and let my mind try to sort it out. As we drive over a small creek, the car bouncing around on the rough concrete, I start. You know what it is? I ask.
No, or I wouldn't have asked.
Smartass, I say, taking in her animated face beside me. It's that I don't want people to need me. I mean, I could say it all sorts of different ways and try to make it sound less asshole-ish, but that's what it is in a nutshell. I know it sounds like bullshit, but people relying on you equates to disappointment to me. The way she twists her entire body my way lets me know that she's not about to just let this go. Unfortunately.
I don't really believe you,
she says. Well, I don't know what to tell you.
That can't be true, Holden. You're a vet, by choice. It's a very need-driven career.
She crosses her arms over her chest.
Don't you think your clients need you?
Yes, my clients need me, but they're animals, not humans. I'm okay with that.
So you just don't want humans to need you,
she states, waiting on my confirmation. I nod.
What happened to make you so
honest? I offer.
Not exactly the word I was going for.
She takes the bag off the floor and sorts through the candy again.
I was going to say scared, but whatever.
I'm not scared, I protest. That's not what I'm saying. She opens a package of Nerds and pops a handful in her mouth.
Well, that's what I heard.
You heard wrong. She swallows and then proceeds to fill her mouth with candy again. It's only after a few minutes that I realize she's waiting me out, waiting for a reaction. I've had a lot of people need me. It's a lot of pressure, I say quietly. The Nerds are forgotten. She holds them in her hand, but her attention is squarely on me. I can feel her stare on the side of my cheek, and it makes me shift in my seat. I don't know why I'm telling her this. It's really none of her business and not something I like to delve into. As I'm about to tell her as much, it occurs to me that we are in this car together because we have some level of trust in each other. She's doing me a hellacious favor, and I need to honor that and be open. I was the only child growing up. My father's only son, I say, as if that explains everything. There was so much pressure to do everything his way and to do it well. Pitching in Little League, wide receiver on the football team, he made me learn how to play piano, and I hated those damn lessons. Honor roll. I clear my throat. If I had a shirt with the top button fastened, I'd loosen it. My chest is constricted as I think about how to further explain myself to Sophie. I'd come home from Honey Creek at the end of summer, I'd say, and he'd try to erase anything I might have picked up from here. He wouldn't badmouth Pap or Tennessee specifically. He'd just make it clear what he thought of the place and that I was above it, somehow.
That's shitty.
I nod. I grew up feeling like his expectations and somehow his successes in life were on my shoulders. Like if I didn't live up to what he wanted me to be and check off all those boxes, then we'd both fail. Then I would be this huge disappointment, and that was the hardest thing, seeing that in his eyes. Sophie sighs.
You know, it's usually the girl with daddy issues.
When I look at her, she's smiling softly. It makes the tension in the back of my neck relax. There's no judgment on her face or smugness, like I've seen in women before when you show them your vulnerabilities or truth. Not that I've ever told a woman before that I more or less have daddy issues, but still. Oh, but I also have mommy issues. My mother. I blow out a breath before just spilling all the words into the air between us. She died of a crazy aggressive form of bone cancer between my junior and senior year. The words come out more strangled than I'd like. Even after all these years, I still can't talk about her passing in normal conversation. The fact that I just tried to proves how weird this whole situation really is.
I'm so sorry, Holden. I remember Pap telling me that, and I cried for you. It broke my heart that I couldn't be there with you.
Sophie's hand covers mine on the console. The weight of her palm resting on the top of my hand brings me more comfort than any hug I've ever gotten, any story ever shared, any well wish from someone over this event in my life. It's as if she truly is sorry for me. Not because she knew my mother or because anyone losing their mother is an awful thing. Maybe it's because she lost her mother too, I don't know. But the warmth that spreads through my body is a relief. I ease up on the accelerator and look down at her flesh sitting on mine. Her hand is so small, and I wonder how it can feel so heavy. She pulls it away too soon. So there's that, I say, raising my voice a little. I give her a tentative smile. You still want to marry me with all my issues? She winks.
Yep. Only because it's fake and you're paying off my debts.
I can't help but laugh. I'm glad you're so shallow.
I'm not shallow. I'm a realist.
She tucks one leg up underneath her.
If I were marrying you out of love, or some other crazy thing, I might want to make sure you were mentally stable and ready to actually be a husband. But what do I care? You can be a lunatic with issues out the ass, and it doesn't matter to me.
Good point. Good point. A small incline brings my attention back to the road. We pass one sign for a lower speed limit, and another welcomes us to Dogwood Lane. A spark of excitement inches its way through me.
We're here,
Sophie says. I don't know where to go.
Just take this road, and it'll be on the left. You can't miss it. It's the only flower shop in town.
Sure enough, we pass a little restaurant with a couple of girls doing cartwheels on the front porch, a building that says it's a salon, and a few other nondescript places before coming upon Buds and Branches. I park the car a few spots down from the main entrance and cut the engine. My heartbeat picks up as I look across my shoulder at Sophie. She fiddles with the hem of her shirt and doesn't meet my gaze. You okay? I ask.
Me? Yeah, I'm great.
She finally lifts her eyes to mine.
You okay?
Never been better. She laughs.
This is your last moment of freedom. Have anything you want to do or say before you're tied with a ball and chain?
I study her as she laughs at her own joke. There's nothing about her that's remotely like a ball and chain. And despite the fact that I'm going to marry her in a few minutes, I'm less nervous about that than I was at the thought of marrying Jessica at some point in the future. A man walks in front of my car. He's wearing a sleeve of colorful tattoos and a tool belt around his waist. A black backward hat sits on top of his head. He looks in the car and gives us a little wave before disappearing into the florist shop. I notice Sophie watching him until he disappears. I bite my bottom lip. We didn't address one thing.
What's that?
I won't be sleeping with other women during our marriage. I think that's obvious, but I want to make sure that's clear.
Good.
I force a swallow and shift in my seat. I would appreciate it if you wouldn't sleep with other men, either. A slow, wide smile splits her cheeks.
That wasn't in our agreement. But that's fine. It's been a long damn time since I've had sex, and my guess is that won't change for a while either.
My lips twist as 100 questions spark through my brain. Why isn't she having sex? Is she on some kind of spiritual journey? Has she not had the time? Does she have self-esteem issues? Besides, she says, if we are really playing this marriage off as real, I can't be screwing around with someone else. I'd have the whole town talking before I got home, and our cover would be blown. As long as we're married, I'm celibate. I look away to keep her from seeing how relieved I am. It shouldn't matter, and I'm not even sure I had the right to ask her that, really. But I did, and it's done now.
I have a quick question myself, she says, the smile slipping. What do we do about the whole kiss your bride thing?
My throat goes dry as I try to deflect all attention away from the way my cock just sprang to life. I don't know, I admit. I guess we kiss. She blows out a breath.
I've been thinking about this.
I've been trying not to.
If we don't pull it off just right, Haley will know something's up, she says. But is it necessary? Or is there a way around it? Or do we just use it to break the ice?
I shrug. I'm not sure. We have to really sell people on this, you know?
Right.
She mulls this over. I don't offer any additional thoughts, because I want her to be comfortable, and if she comes up with something on her own, she's more likely to be okay with it.
We have to sell this to Job, too, she says, picking at her hem again. He's cool with this and all, but if he thinks I married you for money, he'd probably kill both of us. Mostly you. We'll end up being a Dateline special.
Great, I mumble. I exhale long and loud as I try to figure out how to handle this. It's trickier than I imagined, considering she's the first woman I've been attracted to whom I can't sleep with. Because I can't. I cannot sleep with her. Touching her, kissing her, feeling her, all that will overly complicate this. Finally, Sophie sits up.
I think we just try to be adults and be as normal as possible, she says. I mean, it shouldn't be hard. It's not like we can't keep our hands off each other.
She follows this with a tight laugh and no eye contact. The car suddenly seems close and stuffy. I pull at the collar of my shirt, wishing I had a bit of fresh air and some bourbon.
We're like brother and sister, she says.
She lies.
If we have to kiss, we keep it modest and clean, and we'll be fine. Right?
Right. I agree roughly. She looks up at the front entrance to the flower shop. The tattooed guy walks out. He stops on the stoop and looks our way before heading to a truck across the street.
Haley is waiting on us, Sophie says. You ready?
I remove the keys from the ignition and climb out of the car. By the time I get to the front, she is standing on the sidewalk and waiting for me. My palms start to sweat as I approach her. Let's do this. She looks up through her eyelashes before looking down again. I want to tip her chin toward me and promise her this will be okay. But before I can, she starts off in the direction of the shop. Hey, I call after her. She slows her pace.
What?
I step in front of her and wrap my hand around the door handle. Glancing down at her, I grin. Nice justification that we're like brother and sister. You're so full of shit.
Hey,
she exclaims, but I cut her off by opening the door. A squeal from inside the flower shop breezes our way, and Sophie's torn about where to put her attention. I make the decision for her. I toss her a wink and step inside.
Chapter 10. Sophie. Holden holds the door open for me. His lips are twisted into a full-blown smirk as he watches my reaction to his last sentence.
If I could look away from his stupidly gorgeous green eyes and kissable lips, the bottom one with a slight line running down the center, making it look poutier than it even is, I totally would. That's what I need to do. I know that. I just can't. And not just because he's devilishly handsome, standing there and waiting on me to come inside and marry him. No. What's truly intoxicating is the bubble that's captured the two of us. It descended around us at some point between the car and the doorway, bringing us closer together with our shenanigans. It's like it's him and me against the world. And I kind of like it. No, I like it a lot. More than I've liked anything in a long time. Bastard, I whisper as my feet finally move. His chuckle reverberates across my skin as I walk by him. Sophie! Haley shouts. I look up to see her heading across the room with her arms wide open. She's as pretty as ever, with her long black hair and glossy lips. As soon as she reaches me, she pulls me into a warm hug. How are you? She asks as she pulls back. Glancing over my shoulder, she grins. Looks like you're doing pretty dang good from here. I swipe at her shoulder. Stop. Don't embarrass me. I'd never think of doing such a thing. Before I can get my wits about me, a hand lies on my shoulder. I don't have to look at it to know it's Holden's. The gesture catches me off guard, and I think I jump. Haley doesn't seem to notice as her eyes are set on him. I watch her light up as she takes him in, like the tall drink of water that he is. Hello, I'm Holden. He's so close to me that I can feel his words bounce off my back.
You must be Haley.
I am. It's so nice to meet you. I step to the side to give my brain some space to find its equilibrium. There are too many stimuli swirling to keep a level head. Walking over to the counter for some fresh, Holden-free air, I take in Haley's business. It's beyond gorgeous, in a palette of pinks and grays and yellows. The large center section of the building is a flower shop. To the right is a small, cozy bookstore that neatly incorporates sitting spaces for lounging. A coffee bar is flawlessly woven into the decor and brings both spaces together. It's typical Haley, a hodgepodge of directions that somehow come together beautifully. How did you two meet? She asks. I turn on my heel, my heart racing, to see Holden running a hand through his hair. We were great friends growing up, he says.